Chris and Smith is who you see. What a cooler combo in here. Crack a cold one, we're on the air. Big talking brewski. Marissa Smith is who you see. What a cooler combo in here. Crack a cold one, we're on the air. Kicking back, having a few beers, we're chatting. Pull up your chair, we're all relaxing. Any subject, we never dismiss. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Comedy, sex, relationships, more. Any subject, we got it in store. Big talking brewskis is coming in live. Crack one open, Marissa has arrived. Big Talkin' Brewskies.
Hey guys,
Marissa
happy
Smith.
Friday. This is Big Talkin' Brewskies. I'm Marissa Smith, and this week we've got Kate Moran on with us.
Hi.
How you doing, Kate?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. And Mandy, are you on?
Yeah, hi guys.
Hi, we also have Mandy Velez on.
Hi, Mandy.
Hi.
So, Kate, how was your week?
Good. It's, God, it feels long. It feels like a really long week. I'm happy it's Friday.
Yeah, I'm definitely happy it's Friday. I feel like every week feels long since, like, November.
Yeah. I was like, what happened in November? Oh, right. Yeah. That end of the world thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That thing happened in November. So, Mandy, how was your week?
It was okay, aside from the whole political turmoil that's happening.
Yeah.
With everything, but other than that, it's all right.
Yeah, I hear ya. So, now, Kate, I know you're a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
But Mandy, you're not a stand-up comic. What do you do?
No. So I'm actually a editor, a social media editor over at Google, which is really fun, but I have a background in media. I'm a journalist, and that's what I've been doing for the last couple of years in New York before I headed to tech.
Oh, cool. So, yeah. Now, I invited you on because you do have a background in journalism, and you actually were the first reporter to break the the case of the alleged serial rapist and comedian Aaron Glazer. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on was because this week Aaron decided to come back to social media. And
yes, he did.
And he's been back with a vengeance. So now, when did you break this story originally?
So, it was about a year ago, I believe, the first or second week in August, I think. It was August 13th when, I don't know how familiar everyone is with the story.
Yeah, do you want to give us a little background on it for people that don't know?
Sure. A little primer. So basically, I was at a publication called Revelous that I had co-founded, and I was head of the news department there. And one of my coworkers has a lot of connections and friends in the comedy scene. And she comes to me one afternoon in August and is like, hey, so apparently a male comedian who's pretty known at UCB, Upright Citizens Brigade in New York, has allegedly been banned for rape. I think this is something you should look into. You know, I have no experience with comedy at all. I don't think I'm particularly funny, but I do have experience with sexual assault reporting. So I decided to look into it, and I think it was August 13th was when a Facebook post had been circulating among the comedy scene, especially among the UCB comedy scene, saying that, you know, Aaron had been, you know, banned, and if any women had come into contact with him or wanted to talk or have counseling, to reach out to the club. So that's kind of how it all started.
Okay. So now, now I'm assuming that you did some research. Were you able to contact the alleged victims of Aaron Glazer?
Yeah, so it's a little complicated because the allegations say that it was multiple women, and it wasn't just specifically in last year. So
okay.
The alleged victim that I was able to talk to was actually in contact with Aaron a couple years before this had even happened. And she had alleged that she was possibly drugged by him, but definitely sexually assaulted by him.
Okay. So, now, how many years prior did this happen to her, allegedly?
Prior to last year, I don't have I'm sorry, don't remember the exact number. It's been a whole year.
Right.
But I think maybe, three or four. But don't quote me on that.
Right.
But she was in the comedy scene.
Okay.
With him. So, she was a fellow comedian.
So, now, she was, because from reports of this, there's multiple women, and some articles that I've read, there's up to 8 women.
Yeah, I've heard 8.
And so she is one of the 8. Had you had an opportunity to speak to any of his other alleged victims?
No. And actually, just to set the record, she claimed to not be one of the ones who came forward to UCB.
So
she
was
actually a completely different case, and I was not able to get in touch with any of the victims. They were very not open to talking to the media about it.
Right.
And even UCB had refused to say that they had put out the statement to the women to begin with. They didn't even want to say that they did that.
Would they admit to banning him from the club?
They admitted, they actually didn't really admit anything. They admitted to looking into it. But the problem was someone from the club had apparently sent this Facebook message around. But it wasn't allegedly official.
Okay.
And it apparently got out. So they were very much we had nothing to do with that. This is internal. That was their stance on it, and they didn't budge on that, despite multiple sources telling me that they definitely were the ones to send out that Facebook post.
And now was this the post that had circulated in the women's group? That
yeah.
was telling women that if they were victims to contact a member of UCB for, I believe it was counseling?
Yes, that was the post that had been circulating. They didn't claim responsibility or admit responsibility for that.
Okay. From your findings, was Aaron actually banned from UCB?
Yes.
Now
he was. Yes.
No, go on. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I was trying to say, based on his own admittance of that, he had.
So you've spoken to Aaron yourself?
Yes, and his lawyer, yeah.
Okay, and his attorney. So, now, what did Aaron say happened, if anything?
At the time, he was not able to go into detail. All he did was refute the claims and through his attorney, who said that they are looking to set the record straight and all that jazz. And that was last year. However, obviously he's back on social media, and he has reached out to me and other journalists claiming to have information in hopes that he can clear his name.
Right.
Really?
Yeah. I saw that he had a post on Facebook that said that he was looking for journalists and podcasts to leak information to. I'm assuming that you are one of these journalists that he leaked information to?
Yes. He had forwarded me 2 emails. And he did tell me the case is still ongoing. He's still in contact with the attorney, and they're talking about things. So all he had was those 2 emails to forward to me, and I'm not going to go into detail about what they are, just because this could be developing. But
right.
Based on my expertise, it wasn't anything that could definitively say this didn't happen or this did happen.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how 2 emails could be like, oh, it's you didn't rape
smoking gun.
A-plus
yeah.
women.
Yeah. He essentially was, from what I gathered, from what he showed me, I came to the idea that I think he was trying to say that people were just making stuff up about him, that it wasn't based on anything substantial. They were kind of just attacking him. I don't know if that's actually how he feels. It's just kind of what I gleaned from the information that he sent me.
Even if that hypothetically was true, what kind of person would you have to be to have, like, more than 8 women come forward to make up these very specific allegations with times, dates, and details? Like, you're that important to them that they want to take you down that way? That seems...
In all fairness, I will say that until these allegations came forward, I had never heard of him.
Yeah, same.
So I don't really know that he had such a huge career that people would be interested in taking down. But I mean, you know, people do strange stuff. But I don't know that, you know, he definitely didn't have a Cosby type career.
Right.
That, you know, people would feel the need to, like, oh, destroy him.
Right. And from a journalist perspective, you know, on this story, like, obviously, I'm very much pro women, especially when it comes to sexual assault. On this case, I'm trying to keep my personal feelings minimal, just until, you know, we figure out if we're going anywhere from here. But I will say, from a journalist perspective, you know, the reason that this case was important, or these allegations were important to me to surface, was because there has been a problem within the comedian comic scene, and even in industries in general, with sexual assault being swept under the rug. And UCB is one of the most, you know, prestigious in the country. So I think if something is happening allegedly so rampant there, then it was worth looking into.
Right. Now, because totally. You bring up a really interesting thing, and I actually kind of wanted to talk to you about that, was that, you know, you've mentioned that sexual assault is a problem within the comedy community, and it's not just the New York City comedy scene that has been seeing this. I've heard of cases in Chicago as well as L.A. of a lot of serial rapists, and I don't know if this is something that is a problem just within comics, or does this happen with actors? Does this happen with musicians? Like, is this a problem within the arts or entertainment itself, or is
or just
this,
the world?
Or, you know, are we just a microcosm of a bigger rape culture, or is this a problem that male comics and some female comics allegedly don't understand consent?
I think you hit the nail on the head with the microcosm of a larger problem comment. You know, wherever there is a group of women, or wherever there are a group of women, you know, there's a potential for sexual assault. Just because we live in a patriarchal society, you know, it's about power, and, you know, how we sweep so many things under the rug, it allows for these things to keep happening over and over again. And it allows a lot of people, mostly men who commit these types of acts, to think that it's normal. And, you know, it's just a part of the scene or who they are. you know, maybe the creepy, funny guy, you know?
Right, right. Now,
it's almost accepted.
Well, and that is truly the problem. Now, I'm going to try to circle back to Aaron's case for a moment. To your knowledge, has there been any sort of criminal proceedings? Has he been charged for any crimes?
Not that I know of. I have looked into public records, and so far I haven't seen any actual charges that have come down, at least publicly. But he did tell me that there's still something in the works legally. So I have a feeling something could brew or make itself known very, very soon about that.
Within the near future.
Yeah.
Now, also, to my knowledge, well, to your knowledge, really, has anyone actually filed, like, police reports for any of these attacks?
So keep in mind, what I'm saying comes from different sources, and because UCB was so buttoned up about this case in particular, I wasn't able to actually confirm.
Okay.
But there have been multiple sources who have said they did come forward to UCB, some of which made written reports, and that nothing actually manifested from that.
Okay.
So, yeah. And, you know, as a journalist, it makes me wonder, is that why they weren't willing to admit that they sent that email, if that was the case?
Right.
You know, it's like almost like, are they trying to protect themselves? You know, like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is so infuriating, and you're doing the goddess's work, Mandy, I swear. But, like, I feel like what I've noticed in the dialogues that have been happening through social media and a lot of other comedians and people who, you know, have commented on this situation, specifically the Aaron Glazer case, like, being a witch hunt, which is so ironic to me that they use that term.
Wouldn't it be a warlock hunt?
A wizard hunt.
Like a wizard hunt.
But, you know,
Gandalf, he is not.
It's this frustration in the community, I think, and with women in society at large not being felt heard or taken seriously. And you see the backlash that, you know, rape victims and survivors face when they come forward. I mean, look at all of the women who came forward about Bill Cosby. They faced so much hate and scrutiny online, and were called, you know, fame whores or mongers and, like, liars, and trying to just take a powerful man down. And, you know, so I feel like the social media kind of gossip chain has been, you know, it's because women don't feel safe any other way except by, you know, and there's no other kind of way to be able to come forward about these kind of things, which is unfortunate.
Exactly. And, you know, it's hard because without having UCB really be straightforward about these allegations, at least to the press, it's hard to, you know, look into it without being like, he said, she said. So when I wrote this piece, actually, I tried to center it more around this idea that there's a larger argument within, you know, the comedy scene between a lot of the men versus the women, and then even some of the men telling other men, like, that's messed up for you to victim blame like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that even, you know, just as interesting, that this really touched a nerve for a lot of people and sparked a really big debate.
Well, that also brings into play, you know, like the men kind of having conflict within themselves over the issue, where you had Kurt Metzger kind of chime in about this, and that kind of blew up.
And Michael Che did too.
Yeah, but I feel like the Kurt Metzger thing kind of ran, and we had Kurt as a guest on the show to kind of talk about this when it happened last year. Because he kind of was, you know, just to paraphrase, going into the fact that this is a online mob and that it's a witch hunt because none of the victims had gone to the police, and why would these victims go to a club management to talk about being raped as opposed to going to police station to file a police report. And then later he kind of changed his mind because he had spoken to one of the victims, the alleged victims of Aaron Glazer. And he felt that once he spoke to this victim that he felt like, wow, you know, I really missed the boat here. But it does raise a question that keeps coming up again and again. And you know, I had Rebecca Rush on the show a couple of weeks ago, who is a female comic that has been accused of allegedly raping another female comic. And and that also the question that keeps getting raised is, why are these victims going to comedy club management as opposed to the police? And I don't know if the victim that you spoke to went to the police or not, or if they also went to comedy club management, or if they, you know, said nothing. But did they kind of clue you in as to what their thought was of either reporting or not reporting?
So I want to be really general here, out of respect for, you know, the alleged victim that I spoke to. But as someone who has reported on this issue and has dealt with sexual assault personally and talked to victims over the last couple years, I can say reporting a lot of the time is kind of the last step for a lot of victims. They are so just drained in the emotional toll of just figuring out what to do about what happened to them in general, like emotionally, you know, how to handle that other person. Most of the time, you know, it's someone that they knew really well and that they trusted. So it's like having to navigate that is just a huge undertaking. And I know my source had to really think about what happened to her, and it really took a toll on her emotionally that she just completely closed up. And it's like, when you can't even admit something to yourself, how are you going to admit it to someone else?
Yeah, and I've also heard that, like, yeah, reporting to the police is, from firsthand experiences, have been, you know, reporting rape or sexual assault to the police is a very stressful that's an understatement experience. And you know, rape is one of the hardest kind of crimes to prove without concrete physical evidence, and rape kits can take hours and are incredibly intrusive, and you know, you need to somehow prove that sex wasn't consensual. Like, we as a society and our legal system is built to automatically doubt a victim when they come forward. So I completely understand. I mean, I was sexually assaulted in an Uber a couple years ago, and in an Uber pool, and I just called. Yeah. I finally called the company like a couple weeks later, because it took me a few days to even accept that that's what happened. And they were just like, oh, we're so sorry about that. We'll call the guy and see what he has to say, and call the driver and see what he has to say. And then if their accounts match up with yours, then we'll ban him from Uber. And I was like, great, thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, even just as a person, it's like, you know, yes, this happened to you. Okay, let's say you actually finally come to terms with it. You know, you still think about, okay, what's going to do the least amount of damage here? What's going to bring the least amount of attention? You know, how can I make it through this in the just simplest way possible? And I feel like to a lot of people, going to the police is making it a capital T thing.
Right.
You know, and some victims don't even come forward at all. So I just think how we look at it is not, you know, giving enough credit to what victims go through.
Now, and I know this is just you know, magical thinking, but like, if you can, if you were to kind of give a framework for how to correct this. Like, how do we fix this going forward? Because we obviously can't do anything to what's already happened. But as far as just kind of forward thinking as women, as a community, as men that care about women in the community, like, what can we do as a group to try to fix this going forward?
Solve our problems, Mandy.
I hope you have big shoulders, because
we're looking to you.
Like, about as, I'm just kidding. honestly, I'm a huge proponent of consent. I think once we all get into that habit, it will take time. You know, it's not like a magical fix, but I think over time, once people get into the habit of not just doing things and really asking if it's okay, the lines will be a little less blurred.
So you're talking about solving rape culture as a whole.
Right. Yeah, as a whole. But no, I guess within the comedy scene, I don't know you guys too well, but I think it's just a general thing that can apply across the board. It's just holding people accountable. And, you know, not letting things go and not making them feel bad, you know, when they do come forward. Because I think also there's power in numbers. And like you said earlier, if there are multiple people coming forward, then there's something to say about that. You know, it's not he said, she said type of thing. It's like, okay.
She said, and she said, and she said, yeah. And she said, and she said, and then he said.
And I think that's why that, yeah, that Facebook group got created in the first place, was to create that sense of camaraderie and a safe place. I know a lot of conservative people like to make fun of us liberals for craving safe spaces, but when you're constantly threatened day in, day out, having a safe space is really
important.
It's not
a bad thing to have. Yeah.
Exactly. And honestly, it's not, you know, obviously it's to protect women, but like, for the guys too, obviously no one wants to feel like they're being tarnished, but if you do your best, you know, to bring in the consent component and really be transparent about actions, and it could definitely help everyone in the long run. You know, it's for everyone. It'll make everyone's life easier.
Yeah, sexism and rape culture hurts everyone.
Yeah,
men and women.
Yeah,
it really does. And I think that, you know, you bring up a really valid point that I feel like a lot of men in general don't really understand the steps of consent. Mm. And like, you know, I've heard people that think that, you know, just because someone agrees to like go home with them that and then they fall asleep, that they think it's okay to still have sex with them once they've passed out.
I think we need to,
you know,
like, yeah.
It's like, you know, they just there's things that once like. There's things from our perspective that seem quite logical, like, no. Like, but to them, mm-hmm, it's like, oh, well, you know, when they came home with me, they knew that they were going to have sex. It's not my fault they passed out. Like, you know, it's why they can't wait until they wake up, I don't know. But, you know.
It's such a huge societal problem. And it's in our media, pervades everything that we see from billboards and commercials to television and movies. And I mean, I was just doing some quick research while you were talking, and like marital rape was fine. The final state just outlawed marital rape in 1993.
Yeah.
And like that was like England did it in, I think, like 1991 or something. It's just we don't understand. Like, we watch these movies where these women are saying, no, I don't want it. And they're playing hard to get. And that's sexy,
mm-hmm,
right, with quotation marks, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I think there's nothing sexier, though, to be like, yes, I want this. I ask my boyfriend all the time. I'm like, is it okay if I do this? I want to do this right now. Are you okay with this?
Yeah, same. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I think like even the whole like drinking aspect of it, like, for me personally, you know, when I was assaulted, it was more like, you know, we were both really drunk, but I still was like, no, but I wasn't like, no, you know, like, X marks the spot, like, get away. It was more like, I don't want to, but like, I was afraid because I didn't want to look stupid, and
right,
he was a friend, and I didn't want to anger him because he was also very large.
Right.
Right.
And it's like, you need to you need as a man, or, you know, as a woman in a you know, lesbian relationship or a bisexual relationship, like, you have to pick up on these clues no matter who you are.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you said is so on the nose with what so many women, I think, deal with, is that we have taught ourselves since a very young age to how to say no without upsetting a man, like how to playfully turn down a man without hurting his ego or his pride or embarrassing him, right? Because that leads to the danger of possible violence. And so, you know, I can't tell you how many times myself, and I'm sure many women agree with this, like at a bar, you come up with all these excuses just to not accept a drink from a guy, or not to give out your number. Oh, I have a boyfriend. Oh, I'm a lesbian. Like, oh, I have to go. I'm not feeling well. You know,
right.
We're constantly taught to not upset men. And not be, don't be, you know, you have to be cool. You have to be a cool girl. And so it makes a lot of sense that, like, then after an assault does happen, there's so much victim blaming, you know, by the victim themselves being like, well, I put myself in this situation. It was my fault, or I didn't firmly say no enough, you know?
Right.
And that's all exactly. Part of rape culture.
Yeah. I mean, even me, it was like, I only just started talking about it last year, because I'm like, no one's going to believe me, because I, you know, technically I said no, but I still let him in my room, you know? So, like, what ammo does that give me, you know? It's just hard.
Yeah, but that's so fucked up. Like, women should be, I mean, I, you know, this is hyperbolic, but you should be able to walk down the street naked and not have anything happen to you that you didn't ask for. You know, like, the idea of women asking for something by putting themselves in a certain situation, we need to not only teach our girls how to not put themselves in dangerous situations, but teach our boys to not rape.
Well, I think that you know, I think you really hit the nail on the head with that, is that, I mean, not only should you, you know, in theory, be able to walk down the street naked, but you also should be able to change your mind at any point.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's not like, you know, maybe he's doing something a way that you don't feel comfortable with and you feel unsafe and you want that to stop.
Yeah.
Like, you should be able to say no at any point, and men need to understand that you can say no at any point and you have that right. And I think that, you know, if the situation was reversed, I mean, it's the summer. How many hot guys are walking around with no shirts on and they don't, like, expect women to go, like, grabbing them by the dick because they're like, oh, well, he had his shirt off. I mean, he's halfway naked. He wanted it. Like, you know, if men lived in a society that women acted like men, I think that they would have a very different viewpoint on it, you know. But
absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, I thank you so much for talking to us about this situation. And I would like to leave this as an open-ended invitation as this story progresses, if we find resolution to this story anytime soon. I would love to have you come back and talk about it.
Yeah, I would love to. I'll definitely keep you guys in the loop. If there are any updates as we go forward.
And then where can, I know that you're editing now, but I don't know if, like, you know, if there's social media people can follow you on, read your stuff, blogs, vlogs, the whole nine.
Yeah, so I have a full-time gig now that's in tech, but you can follow me at Mandy, MANDY _Velez, VELEZ, and if I happen to pick up a freelance piece, I'll post it there, and you can see and follow along.
Awesome.
Following you now.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Yay.
Mandy. All right.
Of course, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for joining us and talking about it. You were very informative.
Thank you, guys.
So, yeah, that was an intense one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully, you know, I hope that everything gets resolved, because I feel like this has just been a year-long saga within the comedy community. And, you know, it was kind of mind-blowing to think that, like, what we thought was 8 just turned into 9 in the course of 2 seconds of that conversation.
Yeah.
To be updated, it's allegedly 9 victims now.
It's probably more. I'm not going to say that. I'm not a reporter.
I mean, I would say that logic and would dictate that if there was 9, there is most likely more. I mean, Just it's logically.
Awful. I mean, yeah. And the thing is, I don't think, you know, I hope that this particular case does get somewhat resolved in some way. I have to say I'm doubtful. And I feel like this is this case with Aaron Glaser and then the Bill Cosby case, and there's been a few others that have come out since then. It's just kind of the beginning of this new culture where, you know, I think women as a whole are starting to use technology and social media to be able to get their voices heard in a way that's never been
right
possible before.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is this call out culture.
You can sound the alarm in a different way, because before it, like, you know, before the internet, it was just groups of friends would be talking to groups of friends, and then they were playing telephone, and now right. you can have the actual messenger give out their own message.
Right.
Directly to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
But then it does call into question, and I'll play the devil's advocate
right.
for, you know, a moment, that there does create the possibility that people are giving out false information, or that, you know, people are lying,
yeah.
which, you know, but you can lie on both sides. So,
right.
it, you know, it kind of leaves us social media, especially when it's taken to the level of I guess, verbal vigilantism.
Yeah.
That,
ooh, I like that.
You know.
It's that, like a band name.
It's like, yeah. For the verbal vigilantes, bitches! But that...
yeah, no, it can definitely be dangerous. I mean, I
yeah.
think... I have mixed feelings about it. And I was thinking about this before I even came on today. That, you know... I mean, of course, I think the real solution would be to have a better legal system in place, and
yeah.
that, you know, where survivors and victims can come forward and press charges and see kind of legal consequences, you know, for the crimes. I'm drinking a beer right now, guys, so my English skills just went down the toilet.
It's fine.
But, you know,
we
don't really have any other system in place right now.
And then I also kind of look at it from, you know, I always want to believe the victim, because I know that these things happen. But then you also look at a case like Emmett Till, where just this year we found out that it never happened, and that the woman that ultimately got him murdered, like, I don't know, back in the 50s, lied about the entire situation.
Yeah, and but we always knew
that
was
that
a lie.
It was a lie. we always knew it was a lie. But like now we have from the horse's mouth. No,
how
I lied
she
about
live
this.
With herself for that long. You
well,
know what?
She's burning in hell.
Oh,
but that's
God.
That's you know, if you believe in hell.
But I also think, like, for me, the way I kind of function in this industry is that, like, I'll listen. Like, I listen and I'll believe, and I won't necessarily, you take it all in. I think, like, anytime you work in any kind of industry, you kind of, you hear things and people talk, and you have to take it in and take into account, you know, what you're hearing, and kind of use your own gut judgment on how you proceed. And, you know, if there are people who are still friends with Aaron Glaser, like, that's fine. I just looked online. I have 33 Facebook friends in common with him. I'm sure most of them are just keeping tabs on him at this point, or forgot that they're friends with him, whatever. But, you know, I mean, I've never worked with him. I don't ever plan to. I don't know him. Like,
yeah, I've never met him. I've never done a show with him. I'm not friends with him on Facebook.
Right.
I mean, you just checked. I'm not. you know, but I'd like to look at it from all perspectives. And, you know, granted, like, none of these alleged assaults have been substantiated in a court of law. However, somebody that runs a monthly show at UCB, I don't know if that person is going to merit enough attention to have multiple people co-conspirating to,
yeah,
to take
improbable.
Down a career that doesn't exist.
Right.
You know, Cosby, okay. I mean, there's money and fame and possible career involved with being involved with him in any capacity.
Yeah, but I also believe all those women. I think that totally happened.
I, you know, I think something happened. But I don't know exactly what happened. I suspect that they probably knew that they were going to his hotel room, and I suspect that they probably knew that there was going to be some sort of canoodling happening once they were there. But I also don't think that they expected the things that happened to them to happen to
drugged.
Them.
I think the specifics of that case were so... I mean, and this is the thing, like, You hear so many of these things happen. I've heard a lot about Louis C.K. as well. I've read a lot about him, I should say. And, like, you know, you
allegedly.
Kind of... Allegedly. You take these things into account, and I think you decide, like, okay. It's like with corporations. Not to say that corporate, like, corruption is on par with sexual assault. I mean...
But it is on Fox News.
Snap. But, you know, you take it into your... And you're like, okay, do I support this? Like, what do I do now as a consumer? What do I do now as a comedian? What do I do now as a human being?
What do I
with
do
this
as a woman?
Information? Yeah, with as a woman of color, like with this information now, how do I proceed with my life? How do I make the choices that I make with this information that I have?
Right.
Like I read about factory farming and went vegetarian for 4 years because of it, and I'm eating meat again. But I'm aware. Yeah. I'm aware of what of how horrible it is. I just really love beef, but
who doesn't?
It's something I have to reconcile with, you know? Like, that's my choice.
I never met a steak I didn't like.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I have met steaks I don't like, but I do. Like,
I don't know. I can
My parents like them very well done, and it's very upsetting to me.
See, like, I like well done. I don't want the thing
oh,
still
really?
Bleeding and moving.
See, I'm with steak, with a good steak, I want it a little bloody.
I don't want it bloody. I think it's totally gross.
I love, like, beef carpaccio. Like, I want raw meat.
Ah, gross. So now I'm going to switch gears off the steak a little bit.
Okay.
So now what do you feel about diversity on television for women?
Yeah. So I have so many thoughts. We don't have enough time, but I've been watching. I just finished. I'm a little behind. So I finished Dear White People and I fucking loved it. It's amazing. And of course, when I love a show, I immediately go on Twitter and then tweet at the show how much I love it.
Yeah.
And then like, I get really excited when the actors favorite my tweet. But I really love Dear White People, but I had a problem with the Asian character on it. And for those of you listening, my name is Kate Moran, and I'm not a white Irish girl. I'm actually Korean American. I was adopted. And so, like, you know.
I haven't seen the show, so tell me, what's your beef with this
There's no spoilers. Like, this is not going to ruin your watching of it, okay. And this is really nothing to do with the plot at all. Which honestly is part of my complaint. I mean, like 4 or 5 episodes in, they introduce this, you know, it's a show on Netflix based off of an independent movie that won a ton of awards. And it's, you know, the cast is mostly young Black Americans at this very prestigious, like, fake university, like a Harvard type of university, and how they deal with racial tension on campus. And it's so good and so well done. And all the characters are very multi-dimensional and complex, and they introduce this Asian character about 4 or 5 episodes in. Literally, they're like 4 of the main characters are at a party, and this Asian girl comes up and she's like, "Hey, I'm gonna be your catch-all Asian friend, and I'm gonna smoke some weed with you." And they're like, "Okay," and that's the entirety of her purpose. And then she's like in the series for the rest of the series as like kind of this other groupie as part of the group of the ensemble cast. And she has like a few lines about how, like, in one episode about how there's not many Asians on television. And that's it. Like, she's literally a mouthpiece. And I feel like the whole show was fighting about and discussing very relevant, you know, racial issues in America and how, you know, everything from police brutality to, you know, faux neoliberalism and microaggressions and misrepresentation and stereotypes for Black Americans. And yeah, I felt like this Asian character was absolutely just a mouthpiece for like all Asian Americans, and very one dimensional. I don't even know what her name was, and or she had a name. And I get that wasn't the focus of this show.
Asian number one.
She's just only Asian. Like, yeah. She was the only Asian. She was the first and the last Asian on the show. And you know, Get Out was an amazing movie. I saw it in Harlem, and it was the best experience ever. And I loved it. I thought it was genius. And they also had an Asian character on there who literally was just there to ask if it was easier or harder to be a Black man in America. And he had a thick accent and he was Japanese. And it was very stereotypical in a way. And I got what Peele was trying to do with that. Like, you know, I do think that Asian American and Black American relations in this country historically have not been great. There's a lot of racist Asian Americans, mostly of older generations, but definitely of younger generations as well. But as someone who, like, I personally have put in a lot of time and effort into promoting and rallying for rights of all different groups, and especially civil rights, and race is always a very important subject to me. I kind of wish for that, like, liberal rainbow, you know, wet dream of, like, all the races coming together and, like, can we have a show? Is it possible to have a show that is smart and relevant and poignant, like, and complex, like Dear White People, but touches on, you know, they have a gay character in that show, which I thought was really well done. And, like, can you also have a Latino character? Can you have, you know, a trans character? Could you have an Asian character on the show that's dedicated to mostly the Black American experience that also touches on others, you know, as well?
Right.
Because I think, like, while the Black American experience is super specific, and definitely, I think, with Black Lives Matters and all of the police brutality cases that have been coming to light over the last few years, like, very much on kind of the, what's the word, touchstone, the trending point? You know, it's right. Very much on everyone's, like, minds right now, and it's very important that we're finally starting to pay attention to these injustices. Like, not that there's much being done about them, but that's a different story. You know, I wish there was a little bit more.
We suck with intersectionalism as a whole. I think that, and I'm not going to say liberals, and I'm not going to say the left, but I'm going to say people of enlightened characters, just because there's variations of it. And I think that heterosexual enlightened people suck being intersectional with, like, LGBT community. I think the LGBT community sometimes sucks as being intersectional with people of color.
Yes.
People of color sometimes suck with being, like, you know, even within feminism, there's feminism. There is, as much as we'd like to think that we are good at being intersectional, we aren't.
Yeah.
There is definitely a white feminist agenda, a Black feminist agenda, and then I'm going to say, like, an other feminist agenda. Mm-hmm. There's a, you know, an LGBT feminist agenda, yeah. You know, and we as women can't get on the same page as what does it mean to be a feminist, you know, and I'm going to have a lot of people kind of being like, girl, she didn't, but I'm going to. You know, personally, for me, feminism is not about not being called a whore. I don't care if somebody calls me a whore. I want to make the same money a man does. I want to be able, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, I don't want to be charged more because having, like, ovaries is a pre-existing condition.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to be charged more for deodorant.
I feel like you're asking for a lot, Marissa.
You know what I mean? Like, but, like, to me, like, the least problem is a guy calling me a whore. Like, and maybe it's because, like, I've never had a guy call me a whore, but I feel like if you have men calling you a whore, you need to deal with better men.
Yeah.
Like, that's a life choice on your part to be dealing with these, like, trifling ass motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need a whole distraction from the actual problems of not being able to get good health care that people in the medical community don't even know how women have heart attacks.
Yeah.
Because people are so focused on, oh my God, because I had sex with 100 men, they called me a whore. It's like, well, you know, something, it's, you're not the Virgin Mary, but you know, like, it's, if you're in a construct of Mother Teresa and Madonna, like, you know,
right.
But, like, is that really a big problem for you? Like,
well, I mean, and that's the thing that that I think you really hit the nail. We're hitting a lot of nails.
We're
today.
hitting a lot of nails.
We're like carpenters.
Yeah, we are.
But no, I mean, there's a lot of different priorities with different groups, and I think that's the biggest failing, or I should say struggle, challenge, whatever you want to say, for the Democratic Party as a whole, and I'll say liberals, I think liberals as a whole, is in this country, is that there are so many issues. There are so many issues, and we're comprised of so many different groups who have so many different experiences. And the problem with politics is that it's the personal made public. So you're trying to like pass laws and bills based on someone's very personal emotional experience that applies to all people. That's practically impossible.
Right.
So no wonder we are always at an impasse, and no wonder politics is so outraging for so many people, because this is about our lives. And so it's so easy, I think, for people to be like, well, no, I don't experience this. I don't know what you're talking about. I want this solved. I want this help. And your problems don't mean anything to me, because empathy's putting yourself in someone else's shoes, especially, you know, it's harder to look behind you if you're ahead. So I think privilege, you know, gets thrown around a lot, but it's a real thing where you're not always looking behind you. Why would you?
Right.
You're only looking ahead of you to see what you're lacking. So, you know, I think there's a lack of kind of awareness and empathy and listening. I think, you know, I don't know what the solution is, but I definitely think, like, I've definitely had to bite the bullet several times in online conversations and been like, you know what? I'm really woke, but I was maybe wrong on that point, and you educated me on that, and thank you.
Yeah, because, like, I understand, like, people will say that slut shaming is a part of the rape culture as a whole. Rape and sexism is a part of rape culture. Like, I feel like this is millennial bullshit, and I just can't get my head around it. But, like, to me, it's just kind of like, you know something? If you want to go out and have sex with as many men as you want to, no one's saying that you can't. And if somebody's calling you names because of it, don't hang out with that person.
I feel like this is a subtweet. Are you talking about someone in particular?
No, I'm just like, no, it's just like, it's something. It's just like the last decade, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's just like the last decade. And like, and it just makes no sense
right.
to me. And like, I don't think that we need, like, to me, that's like, that's an anti-bullying campaign.
Yeah.
That's not really rape culture.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It is all related, but we have too many issues.
Right.
It's a catch-22, because we have so many issues that need work, but we also have too many, where the more conservative parties, they're very united. They want, you
God
know, less
guns.
Gun. Exactly. They want God and guns.
That's it.
And that's it. And that's very easy to rally behind that,
yeah.
Where when you have such a diverse intersectional group who all want different things and all come from different socioeconomic backgrounds, like, and races, I mean, forget it. And then you add in sexuality and gender fluidity, and God, it's like, it's overwhelming. And no wonder people get upset at the quote unquote PC police over there. Like, but you know, it is, I want to spill some wisdom on you guys, because I have this theory.
Okay.
Because what you were saying about how getting paid the same as men, I mean, I think, you know how there's been experiments done where women of color have, or men of color even, have like sent out resumes with maybe a traditionally Black American sounding name, and then sent out the exact same resume with a more traditionally white American sounding name. And how they were got called in for interviews with the white name versus the Black name.
Right.
And there was an experiment
that's
done.
That's why our parents gave us resume friendly
yeah,
names.
I know. I fool so many people. Although,
me too.
You know, I'm like I'm part of the quote unquote model minority. So I have, it's a different experience. But like, God, what was I going to say? Oh, there was this experiment back in the 90s, I think, where this young Black girl, went around with a Barbie. I don't know if you remember this. She went around with two Barbies, a Black Barbie and a white Barbie.
Yeah.
And one had a princess dress on and one had like kind of shitty rags on. And she went around and asked everyone in the public, just random people, like, who do you think's prettier? And recorded those results. Smart ass girl. I'm so jealous she did this experiment and I did it. But then she switched the outfits and to see what they said. And I honestly
they
don't
always pick the white doll.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And but I think that every problem our country has comes down to money. I think that the whole pro-life, anti-abortion stand is about money when it comes down to it. Because like the Girl Project, we know that when you invest in young girls, when you give them the power to access education and sexual and physical health, when they have the ability to choose what their life is, communities thrive and flourish, and you have less teenage pregnancies, less disease. You have women reaching higher education, bringing more value into their communities. And to me, I think, and we're getting political here, but I don't care, the Republican Party is about keeping the rich rich and the poor poor. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that is to make sure that those under the poverty line of all races, honestly, because I've heard a lot about the white working class this past couple years, you know, keeping them away from birth control is one of the best ways to keep them poor. By not allowing women to access reproductive health resources, you keep them exactly where they are.
Well, it's interesting that you bring it up, because a new trend in sexual assault is stealthing. And stealthing is basically when a man will remove a condom while having sex with a woman.
Yep.
And a lot of these alt-right and neo-Nazi groups are mandating their followers to do the stealth thing because they want to further populate the white race. And
because they're in such danger of getting wiped out.
Yes.
Yes, that's exactly what we're occupying our time with.
To combat white genocide with stealthing.
White genocide is such a hilarious term to me.
So, you know, if you want to combat white genocide, you just start raping more. That's just how you do it.
And that's the thing. I'm really glad that this is now considered sexual assault, because it is. It's lying and it's dangerous in so many ways. I mean, I've actually been sexually assaulted several times, and one of the times was this guy, like, I wanted to have sex with him. I asked him if he had a condom, and he was like, no, I don't. And I was like, oh, that's too bad. I guess we won't have sex tonight. And then he proceeded to still have sex with me anyway. And that was, like, so not okay in my book. I mean, I was a little too coked up to say no at the time. Oh, but those are dark days. Anyway, but, you know, like, that is absolutely irresponsible and deceiving and
And there's
awful.
A lot of states that are making stealthing a sexual crime.
Yeah.
Which it should be, because you didn't agree to that.
Right.
But we're going to have to wrap this segment up. I don't know if you need to go or not. If you don't have to go, you're more than welcome to stay and hang out.
I'm going to hang out.
All right.
Listen to this white guy talk.
Before we go and we start the next segment, where can everyone follow you on social media? Check out your amazing show.
Yeah.
How can people find you?
So I host a monthly show at QED in Astoria every second Saturday of the month called The Revolution, because existing as women and women of color or trans individuals is purely just a revolution in and of itself. So our next one's August 12th at 7:30 p.m. And you can check out my stuff at katemoranproductions.com, and Twitter, Instagram is kickasskmo.
There you go.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break, you guys, and we will be right back. This is Big Talkin' Brewskies.
Hey, ladies. I'm trying to get right. Real thought up, real fancy. I'm going to look like a pinup tonight. Alright, pre-gaming with my ladies, if I might. Let me puff on that hookah, let me sip some wine. Like a modern day pinup with my dress so tight. Tonight I'ma drink my sorrows. Tonight I'ma smoke away all my stress. Me and my girls about to act a hotness. Pop 15 bottles and excuse the hotness. Straight looking cute. All them looking at me, they could get the boo. Don't you them who hit it, see I get a clue. Now duck face girls, it's a photo shoot. It's time to warm my body. It's time to work up a sweat. Go on, DJ, slow the tempo. Cause this party ain't over yet. Yes, we're feeling right. Yes, we're feeling right. Ladies night. Get them hands up high. Keep them hands up high. Ladies night. Popping bottles right. Fitting dresses tight. Ladies night. Yes, we're feeling right. Yes, we're feeling right. Ladies night. And I would say, yeah, man, it's just past two. And I think I'm seeing double, think I lost a shoe. Ended up on the ground, stumbled on my ex. Wore the wall, I was sipping with him, I was next to. Hit up my girls like, what? It's a dub in this club, about to get some grub.
Hop in a cab,
yeah, we up to the height.
Finish up the champagne,
go grab some bites. Segment Express or some patacón. I could go for medio pollo en el malecón. I don't know about y'all, but I'm in the zone. Feeling like someone, coffee patron. Out to the athletes and that is young. Have my entourage is already done. Ain't no stressing out the niggas, ain't no feeling glow. Oh, you having boy bra? I feel bad for you, son. Yes, we're feeling right. Yes, we're feeling right.
Ladies night.
Get them hands up high.
we about to see all them biddies. Divvy up these dollar billies. Throw it in the air like Diddy. So pretty. These strippers to Diddy. These fellas are frisky. It's the life of New York City. Hell of a night, we gotta do it again. And we ain't gon' stop till it's 6 a.m. Yes, I'm a Barbie, I don't need no Ken. It depends on women, who needs a man? Nah, I'm willing out cause I love these guys. But back up, Bobby, it's a female's night. It's a female's night. Back up, Bobby, it's a female's night.
Yes, we're feeling right.
Subject, we never dismiss big talk and brewskis with Marissa Smith. Comedy, sex, relationships, more. Any subject, we got it in store. Big talk and brewskis is coming in live. Crack one open, Marissa has arrived. Big talk and brewskis with Marissa Smith.
Hey guys, happy Friday. Yeah. This is Big Talk and Brewskis. I'm Marissa Smith. We're back, you guys. We are back. We've got Kate Moran back with us.
I'm still here.
She's still here, you guys.
It's because Marissa brought beer.
Yes, I did bring beer. And we are joined with JL Covan.
Hello.
How you doing, JL?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. So,
thanks
like,
for having me.
Yeah, thanks for doing the show. So I don't know if you guys... he's sitting down, but it's quite a tall man. How tall are you?
6'7".
6'7", okay. All right, because I was just like, yeah, I don't know where he begins. how was? Because I was like, you walked in, and I was just like, oh, he's so
wait,
gonna
I'm
hit.
I'm sorry, I was distracted for a second. You're 6'7"?
Yes.
God bless.
That's yeah, because like when he was walking in the door, I was like, is he gonna make that? I don't like. Wait, are we still talking about rape? Like, sorry. But, yeah, so now how was your
week?
That's
often when I come into a room, I just hear rape, and I go, huh, somebody call?
Ghostbusters.
He's kidding, everyone. He's kidding. Please don't ban yeah. him.
You yeah, know, I've already done my stealthing for the day. So,
yeah. Wow. Yeah. You know, he's got a 2 stealth minimum.
Spit out my beer.
So how was your week? Other than your stealthing.
My week was good. My girlfriend was out of town with her family, so it was just me and my dog, and I just went to the gym and did a lot of streaming.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is the life. I feel like a side piece, like with a wealthy benefactor. I was just like, I'm just getting to the gym, getting in shape, watching shows, hanging out with my dog. It was nice.
It must be like it had like a sugar mama or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What kind of dog do you have?
An annoying one, a rescue.
Okay.
It's adopted. I didn't rescue it.
They have baggage.
Yeah. And I thought it was funny. Like my last girlfriend had some issues. And I said to myself, all right, I'm done. I've learned a lot. And I'm going to, you know, my girlfriend is a very normal, pleasant person. And so instead I just got a dog, and unfortunately the dog I can't tell to get on the fucking A train and go home. When it acts wrong, it's just like, well, I've got you for another 12 to 14 years.
Yeah.
With your issues. But she's a mix of all sorts of stuff. She's cute though.
What kind of issues does she have?
she's afraid of everything. And I thought it was odd when I got the dog. They told me after I got the dog, they were like, and she's a little afraid of cars. And I was like, well, was somebody living on the on like a highway in Los Angeles not available? So you thought Midtown Manhattan is the second best option for a dog afraid of cars? She's afraid of men. And I thought, well, good. I guess Shaq wasn't available to adopt. So they said, how about just the largest man you'll ever see?
Yeah.
So it's she's very sweet, but it's just, you know, it's a tug of war 3 times a day to walk her because she just hates the city.
Aww. Yeah.
And my girlfriend's like, we should move. And I'm like, I'm not moving for this dog. I will Lena Dunham this dog before I change my life for this dog. This dog should appreciate what it has. It was homeless in a trailer park in Tennessee 2 years ago. So if my home is not good enough, it can go fuck itself. I love it.
Where did you adopt her from?
The South. There's like an underground railroad.
What rescue?
it was a golden retriever rescue.
It's called the Tugman.
Oh. Yeah. Tugman's pups. But it's true. A lot of my friends who've gotten rescue or adopted dogs, they come from the South.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's like a psychological war the South is trying to play. Like, all right, you may have won the
big
war.
They just bring their shitty dogs up north.
But we'll ruin your life like death by 1,000 paper cuts with our terrible dogs we've mistreated. And that is Linkin Park just looping in the background.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
good.
That's what I've been listening to.
I'm not imagining it because you said it and then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm haunted by the sound of Linkin Park. I hate the people who say Linkin Park sucked, by the way.
No, yeah. They were great for what they were.
For what they were. It was a certain style, and as somebody who's an avid weight room attendee, it serves its purpose. It's good weight room music.
I always work out to Linkin Park.
I do.
But, I mean, I don't really do weights, but, like, I need it to, like, do that extra elliptical,
sure.
You know. But, like, you know, it makes you angry enough.
Yes.
Like, you know, you're just like, ah. I can do 10 more minutes.
Exactly. Exactly. Good. I'm glad you said that because that's how I felt when he passed. I was like, that's too bad.
Yeah.
It's great angsty music, too. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. No, it totally is. You know, it's not the same as like, I don't know. I always feel like my number one angsty song is Zombie by the Cranberries.
Yes.
Like, that is like, you know, like the angst like anthem, but... It definitely, I feel like it gets that more of like male angst or something. Like, you know, you need the yin and the yang of angst.
Yes.
But it's teenage male angst, I feel like, is Linkin Park.
The problem. I feel like emotionally I'm stunted because I got into Linkin Park in law school, which is very weird.
What?
But that's what, like, I was always a little behind all my friends and their musical taste. It was like in college, I was like, hey guys, you like Limp Bizkit? And they were like, we're listening to Bruce Springsteen. Like, even though we're prep school kids, we're listening to Bruce Springsteen because we want to understand the working man. And then I get to law school, I'm like, Linkin Park, all right. And then, like, in my 30s, I'm like, Bruce Springsteen, not bad.
Yeah. That's hilarious. So. I'm just picturing you like studying your law books, like in a suit, listening to Linkin Park.
Furious.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So now how big is this dog?
41 pounds. She's very cute. If I can,
generally.
I'm going to try and talk.
Yes, please. Please show pictures.
But she is, I mean, that's, I joke that my girlfriend, if my dog was ugly, it's the same thing. Like women treat dogs some men, not this ally, treat women based on their looks and they'll put up with a lot of shit if the woman's really good looking and they'll be very flippant if they don't, you know. You've got to have the perfect personality. Let's see if I can find. But my girlfriend, I'm like, if this dog was ugly, you'd already be going, you know what, this dog needs to go. It's making our life very tough. But she's okay.
I had a Shih Tzu, and my Shih Tzu was kind of a little bit of an asshole, but like adorable. Like, you know, these Shih Tzus are so
shih
cute.
Shih Tzus are so cute.
It's
they're
just
such
like they
shits.
Just look at them, but like they're little assholes. But you're just like, you're so cute.
Yeah, I actually used to foster dogs for Badass Brooklyn Rescue, and they rescued primarily from the South. So the reason that I think New York City mostly rescue from the South is because in order to rescue from local, like from New York, you have to. Oh my god. Sorry, he just showed a picture of this dog. That is a gorgeous dog.
She's really, yeah.
She is gorgeous.
I joke. She has no gold. We did a DNA test. Sorry to interrupt, but we did a DNA test to see like what percentage golden retriever she was.
You sent her to like 23andMe,
ancestry.com. In a box. All of her. Just packed her in a large brown
box. That's hilarious.
She came back very scared. but I... We did the DNA test, and I was like, all right, let's see what percentage golden retriever, because they thought she was half golden retriever. Zero golden retriever. I said, you goddamn fraud. I wanted a golden retriever. You're 0%.
Is it a little pit
so
bull?
So what else is she? Yeah.
She's there's Australian cattle dog, beagle, ooh, and chow were the three predominant.
Oh, no wonder she's got issues. Australian cattle dogs and beagles.
Chows,
are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All of those dogs
there's
are high maintenance.
Issue
chows. I'm sure she has siblings that didn't come out as cute or golden looking that are no longer with us.
Oh, yeah,
they're listening to Linkin Park in heaven right
oh,
now.
Oh, man. You are
Linkin Park in the farm.
I thought my segment was a downer. Oh no! I was just going to say you have to be a 501c3. You have to have official nonprofit status in order to be a rescue for dogs in New York. That's why they take it from the South, because you can just have an LLC. That's some really interesting legalese for you guys.
Well, there you go. So now I don't know. Did you guys listen to this whole Scaramucci rant?
Yeah, I listened to him on CNN, and I read what he had said to Ryan Lizza.
Yeah. So, so you don't, okay.
No, I stopped watching the news November 9th, 2016.
Okay.
You've missed a lot.
You've missed a lot. trans people can't be in the military anymore.
I've binged. I feel like I'm on season 938 of Trump on CNN. Yeah. I watched 19 episodes.
I can't.
Today.
The news makes
White
me poop.
House, the
I
real world edition.
It.
Like, it's like,
it's more like Survivor.
Yeah. It's
naked
it's,
and afraid.
It's been crazy. So he told this reporter he's not like Steve Bannon. He's not trying to suck his own cock. Mm. A White House official, which I think is funny because you'll have.
Did he legit say those words?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
He said
record.
Cock three times. And I think fuck and fucking country. Like 10 times within the same interview.
Oh, man.
But
his
then
wife filed for divorce today, by the way. That's a real.
Really?
I just got an update on my phone. Scaramucci's wife filed for divorce. She said she was tired of him trying to get
Salute.
So close to Trump.
Oh, my God.
Family values.
Well, you know, especially that kind of family, I feel like it's like, you know, the Sopranos of the White House.
You know the deal. Like, I feel like he would just tell his wife, I have a side piece. You didn't know?
Yeah, it's just like, listen, you knew I took the job, that there's things I was going to have to do that you weren't going to like. But you don't care when you're getting a minx, right? So shut up, you fucking whore. God. Like, I don't know.
It's really.
And that was just him talking to Steve Bannon.
Yeah. And come on, does he honestly think Steve Bannon's sucking his own cock? He can't even see his own cock.
I know.
Like, ridiculous.
That's not,
man, like, can you imagine, like, throwing up that, like, white lump of flesh to try to find his dick?
Oh,
he hasn't
God,
seen his dick
please.
Since 82.
That's awful.
It's horrible.
That was a good year, though.
It's a great vineyard. but it's crazy. So I follow you a little bit on Facebook. I know you do some impressions.
Mm-hmm.
So can we hear a little bit of your Trump?
Yeah, sure. Let me tell you something, Scaramucci, okay, I love Steve Bannon, okay, he's really good people, okay, really smart guy, runs Breitbart, one of the best, I think, one of the best media, you know, basically the only non-lying media out there is Breitbart, but we had to get rid of Rance, okay, with a name like that, I can't have a guy like Rance. Rance sounds like a rodent running around the White House, so we got rid of him. He's a really terrible guy, but he's good people, I love him, and now we've got John Kelly, General John Kelly. I mean, this guy, I have so many generals, you'd think I'm a pussy because I surround myself with so many tough guys, but I'm in fact the toughest. Okay, I'm actually probably, you know, other than maybe Eisenhower and Washington, maybe the toughest president we've ever had, okay? You don't need to go to war to have great war experience. And now we're going to have John Kelly running things, chief of staff, probably the best chief of staff ever picked, I think.
Wow.
Awesome.
I'm like having like PTSD flashbacks.
I know. It's just like, oh my God, how did I let the orange man
you
in?
You guys
here?
Have to watch this the video feed because that was, he also got the hand gestures down perfect.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, my hands shrink during the telling. That's authentic.
You have to like wait and you're like, hands shrinking.
That was amazing. That was really
you.
Good.
The problem, and when I do that on stage, I get a lot of people laughing, but then sometimes you have people who aren't laughing and they come up to me after the show and they're like, I couldn't like that was just like it was creepy.
It's too upsetting.
I'm like, that is a good compliment. I will accept that as a reason for not laughing.
Yeah, it's like I'll accept creepy if you're not laughing. Otherwise, what is your problem?
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I, you know, this whole thing, it's like I mean, there's so many levels of wrong with Trump and his administration. But this Scaramucci business pisses me off in the fact that, like, how many rooms have told you that you had to go clean? And it's like you have this, like, White House official saying cock and fuck, like, in an interview with the press. And we can't say, like, anything. And, like, you know what I mean? It's like, how are we held to a higher standard than the White House? Like, I just, it boggles my mind.
Because it's called modern presidential, okay? Read up on it. That's a thing now.
Yeah, it's called bullshit. And
these are terrible. It's just these are. I just the problem is these are people, both Trump and his people that follow him and support him. I think they don't really know anything about the history of the country or why a free press is important, why the institutions of government are more important than the people in them. So, and I just saw the Al Gore documentary today, the sequel to Inconvenient Truth, and in it is a clip of him, you know, at the end of 2000, conceding the election. Although I disagree, you know, he said, you know, for the sake of unity of the country, I concede, let's move forward. And that was that should go down as maybe, other than his environmental work, one of his great moments, because it was putting something that was very bitter, and I still think he was right. You know, knowing that I'm not going to keep this country divided any more than it already will be for another 4 or 8 years. And I feel like Trump, that would never enter his mind to do something like that. Like, on the smallest things, he's petty and resentful.
Oh, totally.
Because he doesn't care beyond what is happening to him, for him, about him. So,
well, as a politician, aren't you supposed to be a public servant? Like, that's the definite, that's like another like synonym.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's a celebrity. He's not a politician.
No. Well, I'm going to disagree with the fact of Gore that being one of his shining moments, because I honestly feel I voted for Gore. I worked on the 96 Clinton campaign. Like, I've been a Democrat my entire life. I come from like 5 generations of Democrats, but I feel that had he fought harder then, that we wouldn't be in this situation now. And that I think that the Democratic Party always goes the high road. When they go low, we go high, and we get fucked every single time.
Melania Trump said that, right?
Yes, while she was getting pissed on by the Donald. Yeah. allegedly.
So glad I didn't eat dinner.
I'm
going to get drunk over here.
Yeah, I'm just going to drink way the next 4 years. But
I guess I'll have one. I feel rude.
Do whatever you like. There's no pressure here.
Peer pressure.
But I just kind of feel like when he did that he kind of set this precedent that the Democratic Party is a bunch of pussies. Like, I just kind of, that's how I feel. And that we're not going to fight for our convictions, and that we're just going to let the right roll over us, and they can play whatever dirty tricks they want to, and we're just going to be, you know, try to perch on the moral high ground instead of getting down and dirty and you know, really getting into battle. Because in this particular case, and I kind of feel the same way with Hillary, that she won the popular vote. That I feel like if she demanded, like, you know, well, we need recounts, there's Russian involvement, there's, you know, FBI investigations, this, that, and the other thing. I think that we crumble too fast for the quote-unquote sake of the country, and I think it's short-sighted, because just because something is easier doesn't mean that it's right, and that are we any less divided right now than we would be if we were like, well, you know, something, we don't have a count yet. Like, I
think, like, I don't think Democrats can win. And I think Hillary especially just cannot win. I think no matter what she does, she fails. And she knows that. And that's one of her biggest flaws and Achilles heel. It's like back in the 2008 election and now, it's just she tries to please everyone and she can't. She's too hated. No one, she can't, like, even if she was to double down on that and be like, no, this is not right, she would have gotten so much. I mean, like, look at what happened right before the election with the FBI reopening up the investigation or whatever. It wasn't even about her.
Yeah.
And they found nothing.
Right. It's because a fucking wiener can't keep his wiener in his pants. Like,
I got to say, though, I do wish Anthony Weiner was in Congress now. And I know that sounds weird because he's the only person that comes to mind that would just get on the House floor and go, "We have a fucking monster as president, people. Why are we acting like this guy's fucking normal?" And I'm not kidding. I think he would literally say that. And it's like, it's amazing when you talk about everybody seems to be dancing around the fact that this guy is a fucking moral monster, mentally deficient, probably entering dementia. Mm. Just there's literally, he's the dream team of worst characteristics you could have in a leader.
Right.
And everybody's just kind of hoping that we like Republicans are hoping to survive him.
Yeah. Like genetic recessive material.
Yeah,
I feel like we should just lean in. Let's just like burn it all down. Let's just like burn the whole thing down and we can rebuild again. Maybe this is what we need. It's just like blow this whole thing up. Well, you know what? I tried. I canvassed for Hillary. I phone banked. I like really cared about this election because I kept thinking about like my lesbian and gay and trans friends, my Muslim friends. I was like, we cannot validate the white supremacy that this country is
LGBT people. And he said that at the convention and people were like, that's the first Republican ever to say that. And it's like, okay. And he's governing like, you know, Pat Robertson. So who gives a shit?
Yeah. And meanwhile, he has a literal Nazi in his cabinet. Like
he doesn't, honestly, that's the thing that's so funny. Not, I guess like
Stephen Miller.
He doesn't care about any of these issues. He doesn't care. He just wants power and money.
His issue is Donald Trump.
Yeah. He didn't even want this job. He just wanted better ratings. Or he just wanted his own television
network. His 11-year-old son wears old man New Balance sneakers. I mean, that's a man who doesn't care about his family. So why should we think he cares about the country?
That's only because he can't tie the laces.
By the way, Barron Trump is going to be about 6'11". That kid is built like a white goober Kevin Durant. Like I just think he's in for a, like, as the son of a monster, you wish he would be like, if he turns out to be somehow, by a miracle of miracles, like a decent person, you want to be like 5'5 and like anonymous. Like, you don't want to be my height and the son of Hitler. It's like, there he is. There's Bear, and I see him in his size 16 New Balances. What a monster.
I kind of feel like a lot of people are just like, Barron has to be off limits. He's 11 years old. And
hey, he's 5'11". That's as soon as you reach 5'10", you're on limits regardless of age.
Is he really 5'11"?
He's a tall. I don't know how tall he is, but his mom. I'm
looking this
and
up right now.
Look at a picture of them walking. He's just in sneakers. He's. I would guess 5'9 minimum, which is really tall.
But I feel like every picture I look at him, he looks like he's getting like closer and closer to like Joffrey from Game of Thrones.
Well, that's the
like
fear.
I think that
it's either that or the kid who was breastfeeding his mom at 10 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's one or the other. Isn't Jon Snow being raised in Trump Tower?
Yeah, no, that's Tiffany.
who's going to Georgetown Law, so now I will be only the second most disgraceful alum of that school.
It's crazy, but I don't know. I feel like I think Trump's gonna give him like a hooker to sacrifice on his 18th birthday. Like it's just he just looks like he's going to be
this
an awful.
This is how Grandpa Fred did it. Okay, right after he attended the KKK rally. Okay, just attended. Okay, just as a guest, was not a member. Don't listen to the fake news. And then he brought me a hooker, okay? And, you know, I had my way with her, pleased her a lot. She said it was the best ever, and then we buried her under Giants Stadium.
Because that's how you do it.
No, you're right. So I just did some Googling, and apparently Barron Trump's height is a popular subject. And they do guess that they don't know his exact height, but they're guessing about 5'11". You're right.
Yeah, holy shit. I know height.
Yeah, you do.
Okay, I brought in an expert.
He's 10, and he's 5'11"?
He's 11. Yeah. I was 5'6 when I was 10, like, to put it in perspective.
Really?
And that's really tall.
Yeah.
So just to put it in perspective.
I'm 5'3 and I'm 29. I feel like there's I feel like that's a disorder.
Yeah.
After like 23, though, your age doesn't matter for height.
Okay.
You're not still growing.
Well, I didn't have to age myself, I guess. Oh, whatever. I'm younger than all you motherfuckers.
Yeah, that was a great decade. So but like
20s are the best.
I'm so glad they're almost over. Are you kidding me? 20s suck.
Well, based
can't
on
wait
what
till
I based on what I heard before, maybe in your case, but 20s rocks for me.
Shade, dude, shade.
When you're 6'7", you can only throw shade. Height joke.
He wow. is the shade.
High five that.
Yeah, I don't know. He
can
just,
you do another impression? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, do you do other impressions?
I do, but here's one of the problems is that the Trump, because I've been doing it so much, has started to like literally like infect
all
other
impressions.
People are like, when you said that, you kept saying "believe me" during your impression of Biggie, and it's like, that was definitely Trump seeping in. I'm trying to that's the problem with it. I do have a lot of impressions, but I tend to just move from one to the next and then like do it for, you know,
whenever. Yeah,
wait, 3 months.
You can do Biggie.
Yeah.
Can you just try though?
Yeah, yeah. Let me dust it off. Man, I don't give a fuck, motherfucking Trump. Okay? Trump came to my building, told my mother, get the fuck out. I said, fuck you, Trump. It almost turned into JB Smoove, who I did an impression of, but then I realized it sounds racist. And then I realized, but that is basically to do a good impression of JB Smoove, you sort of have to sound a little bit racist. You have to sort of degrade black people to do an accurate impression of JB Smoove. So it's a tricky tightrope.
Are you a biracial person?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you can say that half of you is not being racist?
Right. Okay. But that Irish half is very racist.
That Irish half is being racist as fuck, but
yes,
you know.
I've often said about my mom, I said, my mom is white, but it was kind of like being raised by a black woman because she was the main breadwinner. She married a black man. She said the N-word a lot. So it felt like having a black mom.
That's hilarious. I want to meet your mom.
She's a firecracker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those Irish. My dad's Irish. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My mom's a very complicated person because she's like that blue-collar Irish that you would think would be diehard. And we're Catholic. She fits all the
stereotypes.
The racist Trump voter. And she's the bluest of blue.
Right.
I don't know. That's yeah. And the Biggie. I'm sorry. The Biggie, dusting it off. I have a video from a couple of years ago, like a sketch video, where it was a parody of the movie Big, where the guy wishes he gets shit on by everybody. So he wishes at a Zoltar machine or Zoltan, whatever down on St. Mark's Place.
Yeah.
I went there at like 4 a.m. when it was abandoned to film. Yeah. And I was like, I want to be Biggie. I wake up the next morning just dropping N-bombs, beating up gangbangers, just
oh my
talking
God.
Shit to women. So that's where
that
the
sketch.
If you just look up Biggie, like, well, no, you'd have to look up more. You'd probably have to look up my name. Once you get to the 3,000th video, that should be my sketch.
Yeah.
But there it was because the Trump has been just such a dominating moneymaker for me recently that it's like I feel like I want to get rid of it so that I can just sort of.
Can you do Obama?
I had a very good Obama in 2008 when nobody was doing it, and now I feel like I'm just you just kind of do the what people do. But it was, I swear, it was really good. But now it'd be like we have to be mindful that Donald Trump is our president. We may not have voted for him, but he is our president, and we have to, you know, and it's, I feel like.
Yeah. No, it was really good.
Yeah. But it was better, is what I'm saying.
Because Trump ruins everything.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He's like, it's my impressions, T cells are disappearing as Trump AIDS infects my impressions.
It's getting Putinized. so now. What are your thoughts on the future HBO show, The
Love
Confederate?
Nah.
I was like,
what? Well, no, I think.
Now, first of all, for people that don't know what the show is about, what is the show about?
It's basically, they say it's taking place in the near future where the South won the original Civil War, and this is like the lead up to a third Civil War. So I guess they're imagining, obviously, in the future there would have been the South wins in 1865.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess sometime between 1865 and 2020, there was another Civil War. So I guess there's still slavery in the South and they're two separate countries. So it's being done by the Game of Thrones creators, not the author, but the guys who've basically.
Wait, Benioff and Weiss?
Yes.
Oh, fucking hate those dudes.
Okay. See, and my thing with it is I'm a left of center person. But I feel like, and I'd never want to be like, you know what? Now I kind of understand why some people get mad at the PC stuff. Because it's like, if somebody says Black Lives Matter, you're like, enough political correctness! It's like, no, now you're just showing your hand that you are actually just somebody who, whether it's transsexuals and transgender people in bathrooms or Black Lives Matter, you hate all of that. Anything that reminds you that you and yours might have done wrong to others, you're just like, I'm not having it, enough. We had a black president, all bets are off, no more slavery talk, no more racism. Shut up, go to work hard.
Right.
So it's like you tip your hand with that. But then, and I feel like social media is having sort of a negative effect even on me, where I start to, you know, you see stories and it's like, okay, yes, a black person was named or a woman was named to this movie role. And the article title, of course, says, and Twitter lost its mind. And it's like 15 tweets. And I'm right. Like, there's like a billion Twitter accounts. I don't think that qualifies as Twitter losing its mind, but it looks good. It's like, of course you can find some racists who hate shit.
Right.
When it came to this show, I immediately thought, I don't know if that's going to work, but I didn't immediately go, you don't have standing to make this show. Like, which became sort of the thing. Like, I don't like the way they've handled race on the Fantasy Dragon show. So therefore I cannot trust them with this. And I brought up to somebody like, what about David Simon? White guy made a classic show about black neighborhoods in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And the retort to that was, yeah, but he was a reporter for 20 years covering Baltimore. So yes, of course, he had a grounded knowledge, but he still wasn't a black person living in Baltimore. Like, he wasn't living in some drug den in Baltimore. So right. There was still a leap that had to be made. And for this, I was just like, I'll give it a try because A, it's HBO, and B, it's the guys who made Game of Thrones. I love Game of Thrones. But I think in this day and age where TV, I think most people would have to admit, TV is way ahead of movies in terms of diversity of storytelling, cast, mm-hmm. writers. It may not be perfect to some, but it's pretty damn good. Like, it I really think it is.
Game of Thrones or television?
Television.
Yes.
And so for me, it's like, so what if Game of Thrones, I don't think it made a conscious effort to be like, we've got to get a white show out there. I think that's just the way it was done. And it's been done really, really well. So I'm just, you know, and The Man in the High Castle was a show on Amazon, which I didn't care for. But that was, what if Germany and Japan won World War II? And there's a lot of black people dead and Jews being hunted, mm-hmm. you know, in the aftermath of a German victory. And other than some Subway ads that people found rightfully sort of insensitive, nobody was like, this show can't be made. And I just think it's sort of, you know, that's almost my point, I guess, when it comes to art and genuine efforts at making something creative. This isn't Kramer on stage yelling the N-word. I give a wide berth, wide latitude to, like, I'll see it. And if it sucks, I'm not going to watch it. I don't owe it anything. But I would be curious, considering they made a show that I think is great, to see what they do.
But on the other hand of mm-hmm. that, and I hear you completely, don't you also think that maybe it's kind of convenient that they're picking something that's so controversial and so relevant to, like, a lot of tension that's going on right now? Like, I mean, Japan and Germany winning World War II is one thing, but
it's provocative.
It's very provocative. And knowing these, if you saw the last week's episode of Game of Thrones, like, knowing Benioff and Weiss, they love stirring shit up. They love being controversial. They love pushing the envelope, crossing those boundaries. I'm sure part of the reason why they pitched the show in the first place was like, this will get some people going.
And maybe. But at the same time, it's like, if the show is sort of some sort of, I never know if I'm using the word allegory correctly. That's one of those words that I have never mastered in my life. But I feel like if it's sort of a, yes, this is a future, but it's showing common threads throughout American history, but in an alternate universe kind of way. It could be interesting. It could suck. It could be mishandled, but it could also be good art.
I think that it's, you know, and I really don't know much about the story because I just basically, like, read a headline and I was just like, oh, fuck that. but to me, I just feel at this point it's just being a provocative capitalist. Like, whatever you feel is going to get the most uproar you're going to do because you're going to you're going to benefit from it financially. I just kind of and I'm a huge fan of Game of Thrones. I like the show a lot. I do feel like they have a diversity issue, but I feel like you can't even just say that they have a diversity issue because it's a story based in fantasy, because like Girls has had a diversity issue as well, and that's supposed to be more rooted in real life today. And I mean, I'd argue with anyone to tell me that Lord of the Rings doesn't have a diversity issue.
Yes. Well, I think see, the problem is, I think, and I remember writing this like after that, when the show was announced, I said, there can be a discussion. I think fantasy in general seems to be a very predominantly white genre, from Star Wars to Lord of the Rings to like the future features various pointy eared and different shades of white. So right. I get that, and at the same time, I can understand somebody saying Game of Thrones, like, it's, you didn't cause the problem, but you are continuing the problem.
Right.
But sometimes I feel like, because Game of Thrones is so popular, people are acting like it started with, like the creators of Game of Thrones came with this radical white agenda to, like, limit perspectives or casting.
Right.
Sometimes how it feels like it's being treated.
No, but, I mean, you can say the same thing with, like, you know, Sex in the City. That's also supposed to be Manhattan, Seinfeld, also Manhattan, one of the most diverse populations on the planet. And like, you know, it wasn't until like the last season Sex and the City had a regular occurring black character, and Seinfeld had like one black girlfriend for like two episodes. So I feel like television in general has a diversity issue, but I feel like,
but I would argue, sorry to interrupt, but yeah, my thing with those shows, and having grown up in New York, went to private schools in New York, and seen a lot of my friends, female and male, gravitate back to, like, you can go to a college that promotes diversity, and like, I have friends of different stripes, but that's also, I think, a function of me having my background. And, you know, I think I could point to all sorts of things in my background, whether it's where I've worked, what I do, sports I've played, like, that have just brought different people into my life. But I see it, I have seen it a lot. Like, I have friends, some of my closest friends, you know, maybe one Asian, six white dudes. Like, whenever I'm getting introduced to a friend from work, and I, like, girls, I just didn't like girls. But when people said, this isn't modern New York City, I said, maybe not for you, but I do think there are a lot of people. I'm not saying good or bad, and I, like I said, I didn't really care for the show, but I feel like people underestimate sometimes how cliquish, and your college might be 31% minority, but when you go back to your Upper East Side neighborhood, and you're hanging out with your colleagues and your work, your friends from high school, mm-hmm. or your parents' friends or whatever. I've seen it. I'm not saying it doesn't. I've seen both things: diverse groups of people, and then monochromatic, kind of even in their 30s and 40s. But not that like I never. That's one of those things when it's telling real stories, I never. For me, I never automatically discount it as unrealistic. I'm not saying it's good. But I sometimes go, yeah, girls, I honestly can, I can go out on a Saturday night tomorrow night and find a bunch of quartets of white women. Yeah.
Right.
You know.
But I, you know, and I understand it, but like, and I didn't grow up in the city. I grew up in Westchester, and I also went to like an all-girls college prep. So I definitely was in an environment where I definitely was a minority. I felt like a minority. And, you know, in my class of like 120, there might have been like 10 black girls, maybe three Asians, four Latinos. And we lost our one Muslim in like eighth grade. So,
rest in peace.
Yeah, I was going to say the same.
Rest in peace.
So, yeah, but like she was one of my friends, and like, but and understanding kind of like what you're saying is, but like in my high school, like, you know, all girls, college prep, a lot of affluent people that went there. I was friends with the Muslim. I was friends with the Buddhist. I was the agnostic. I had friends that were Hindu. I had friends that were Irish Catholic, Italian Catholic. I had friends that like were, you know, goth to the captain of the cheerleading team. And we all were friends with each other. And like, there really wasn't going to be a Saturday night where I would only be with black girls or only be with white girls. Like, my group was very diverse.
But that's why, see, that's, and that, what I would argue is then that's why your story needs to get told.
Yes.
Because I could, I think I could say there, I bet you there could be 10 white girls in your class who would be able to tell an opposite story. Like, oh, I just hung out with, sorry for the name, Becky, Jenny, and Michelle, and they were all white, and they like, that would be their story. So it's like,
don't,
that's why,
Jessica.
Yeah, that's why your story, that's why I feel like, especially now on TV, it's not just diverse casting, but it's more, it's moving up the chain a little bit more behind the camera, whether it's the writers or directors,
right.
Because if you keep with the same people, they may have, their experience may be what we consider whitewashed or whatever, because that actually is their experience, which is why I think moving it up the chain and behind the camera is just as important, because your story would be your story and real. And it would be naturally diverse instead of like, hey, we need a this and we need a that.
Because tokenism. Like, you know, we whenever we had mass, like, because we were the non-Catholics, we would always sneak out of mass. And that was like a whole production in itself, because like, we had to sneak off campus, go behind the convent, climb a fence to go past the synagogue to end up in Starbucks. And it's like, it was like the agnostic, there was the Muslim and the Buddhist. And like, we would just like be like, all right, well, we're just in the way. Like, if you're in mass, like, you're in the way. Like, they've got to get up. They got to go and do like the whole like Eucharist shit. And they got to get up and you're just standing in the corner. Cause like, now you're just like, all right, now if we sit down, we're in the way when they had to come sit back. Like, so like, let's just get out of here, like get a cup of coffee and we'll sneak back in when everybody's going to class after mass. And so like, we would sneak out and this whole like Mission Impossible thing, like trying to get out of campus. And then we get to Starbucks and like all these teachers are sitting there. They're like, well, you guys are supposed to be in mass. We're like, so are you. Like, you know? And it's like, all right, we won't tell if you guys won't tell. And then we had to do the same thing in reverse to try to sneak back into mass to try to look like we were coming out of mass to go back to homeroom.
I would watch that show.
Like, but it was just, you know, that's
no,
just
I,
how we did it.
I think
it.
You have a point. I think what it is it, to me, for me, I think I honestly haven't been following the Confederate HBO series story much, but like,
but you have a Game of Thrones issue.
I do have a Game of Thrones issue, but this is not my segment anymore.
Too awesome.
But I think like we're
but
just,
what is your Game of Thrones issue?
Well, hold on. Okay. I'll get to that. But I think the issue is that like we're just, I'm personally, I'll only speak for myself, I'm tired of seeing the same white stories over and over again. People get really upset at me when I'm like, I don't like Seinfeld. I don't like Friends. I don't like Seinfeld. I don't like Friends. It's white nonsense. I don't see myself in these stories. I don't see my friends in these stories. I don't care. And that's great. And you can have it. But we've had that for the last however long film has existed, like what, 80, 90 years now. So go fuck yourself. I don't care. I want to see my friends. I want to see my story. And I think you're right. We need to have more diverse writers, more diverse producers, directors. We need more women who are behind the camera.
But also, as somebody who watches a ton of TV.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just I'm always trying to, for pop culture reasons, reference reasons, but like there is a lot now.
No, it's gotten, yeah, no, it's great. And I agree with you. I think
what more do you want?
I but think a we're lot in a golden age of television.
But like, honestly,
way, but
though, a lot compared to none. This really,
right.
Because like when the 80s, like what you had, the Jeffersons, you had Good Times.
Cosby. Well, you're going 70s. That was really 70s.
Well, okay. Good Times was really 70s, I guess.
And Jefferson's was like 70s, 80s.
Well, it was the 80s.
Yeah.
Because I remember watching it. But like, and Good Times was on reruns. Then I guess like 70s, 80s was like Red Fox. But those were really stereotypical. Like, I guess like the Jeffersons was kind of like out of the mold because, you know, he was moving on up and he wasn't like living in a project and didn't live in a junkyard. But like, you know, he was like a middle class black man was a business owner, and that was.
But that's how they made black families palatable to the rest of America with the that and the Cosby Show. They were like, look, they have money. They're eloquent.
Right.
And you can relate to them.
Yeah.
They're like white people.
Yeah. And it, but like that's so you had those shows, and then you moved on to the 90s with your Family Matters.
Fresh Prince.
The Fresh Prince.
Terrible Cosby. Family Matters always felt like the RC Cola to like the Cosby's Coca-Cola.
I loved Steve Urkel though.
No, I watched it, but it was always like, this is okay.
No, but I mean, that's the thing. It's like why I liked Smirnoff Ice in high school. I never drank alcohol before. Like, when you don't have anything before, well, the shittiest thing looks
before high
good.
School would be a very early time to be drinking. Yes. I didn't drink till college.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, yeah. Well, anyway, I also think a lot of the backlash for me, well, I interpret it as I'm really sick of slavery fan fiction. I'm like, I fucking hate Quentin Tarantino, and I really hated Django Unchained, and I was just like, I think he literally just cast black people in his movie so he can get away with saying the N-word, and I hate every time he says it, and I just...
But he doesn't always have... It's usually white people saying it.
Yeah.
He doesn't need the black actors for it.
I fucking hate, like, slavery movies and television shows. Like, Roots was important back in the 90s, and not... But, like, we...
The reboot on History Channel wasn't bad. It's more graphic.
Oh,
it wasn't
great.
As important.
That's all I want to watch is like black people getting whipped. No, I want to see real
stories.
Do
you want the nene as well? Because you're like my Ed McMahon. You've been my Ed McMahon. I've heard your like laughter on the side the whole time. So I was like checking to see if I got another chuckle.
I think you wanted a sound. You know, you got to keep up with it, David.
Quentin Tarantino is one of those. When it comes to art,
I actually like Quentin Tarantino. I do.
I think he makes like Django Unchained. I loved. I thought that movie was awesome. Like I know there are problems, and he clearly loves the Uma Thurman's feet and the N word. Those are like two of his favorite things.
So you want to know uncomfortable? I saw Django Unchained with my mother. Okay. And because like she wanted to see it, and I was like, "All right, I'll go see it." And so there's that scene where like Jamie Foxx is being like held by his feet upside down, and he's naked, and then they like kind of like have a close up of his junk, and then they start pulling out, and that's when you realize that he's like upside down and naked. And so like
I don't remember that part. Maybe I should watch this again.
I will. This is ingrained in my memory. And
you sure, this wasn't Booty Call.
I'm sitting there with my mom, and my mom is like, "What is that? Is that a little bald man?" And I'm like, and I'm looking, and I'm like, "No, I don't think so."
Oh my God.
And then as it's like zooming out, and I was just like, "No, that's not a bald man, honey. What is that?" I'm like, "Those are his balls, mom." It's like, what? I'm like, "Those are Jamie Foxx's balls." Oh my God, I'm looking at balls? And it was just like, I was like, oh my God, how am I watching this movie with my mother right now?
Can we get T-Pain saying alls? Do we have that capability?
He doesn't have a sound. This is a classy show.
blame it on the ball. No, okay.
Yeah.
That joke would have crushed 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I think Quentin Tarantino, he has made mostly really great movies, and I can see issues with him, but like at the end of the day, I tend to judge, you know, I'm not going to say I'm going to be like, well, Birth of a Nation is actually quite a fine legendary film.
I have not seen that.
Oh, I mean the original, the racist original, which is like a landmark cinema, piece of cinema. But it's also hugely racist. I just think Quentin Tarantino, I get why people have problems with him, but at the same time, I'm like, but I'm not going to lie and say I don't enjoy 80% of his movies.
I do like a lot of his movies, honestly, and I wrote an essay in college about Pulp Fiction, and it was great. But I think he's so far up his own ass now, and I fucking just hate him as a person.
Okay.
He knows what he did.
I'm getting the 3-minute mark.
Okay. That's what that was.
Do you have the receipts? I've heard that on social media. Yeah.
Do I have the receipt?
For why you hate... No, never mind. Oh. You said he knows why.
I know this is going to be a kind of a deep thing to try to go into quickly, but like What is the declining middle class of stand-up comedy?
Ah!
You have 2.5 minutes.
I wrote a profound blog 6 years ago about this, but being a road comic who features 90% of the time, it's the same pay as it was 25 years ago, except now half the clubs don't give you a hotel.
Okay.
So there's this filling the gap. It should have been, you know, usually feature work is kind of the middle management of comedy, and then you get good enough, you make contacts, you work your way up, and maybe headline a Thursday or Sunday, and obviously you want to be getting TV credits, this or that, to bolster your sellability. But now, you know, if you have 1 year experience and you've been on MTV or something, you jump to the head of the line,
right,
and they keep cutting back. They don't cut the headliner's money, and they don't care about the MCs anyway, because the MCs are just like, I'm just looking to get stage time, I'm a local guy, so it's not hitting. But if I gotta fly someplace, put myself up, and I'm getting 600, I gotta hope to sell $300 or $400 worth of CDs to go home with some money. And I feel like comedy needs a guild, and I think it's,
we do need a union.
Wait, yeah, that you're right, there is no comedy union.
No, there
that's
isn't
really, and fucked up,
and they, I know, tried a few years ago,
right,
but it,
and I know a comedy guild cannot be as powerful as like Screen Actors Guild. Like, we're not going to get health insurance, but in terms of grading clubs on what they should pay, what accommodations should be given to a feature act, like these could be things that are set out,
right,
but it would require headliners to band with the lower level people and not just kind of say you're on your own, kid, because it's like, you know, veteran comics, you did have it better in the 90s and the 80s. It's,
right.
This isn't, you didn't have this shitty existence. You were getting the same money as I get, literally, not adjusted. You got $600 and a hotel in 1985.
Right.
I'm getting $600 and a hotel in 2017. That seems wrong.
Right.
And, but I've often said comedy, the problem with comedy, to quote the king from Braveheart, the problem with comedy is there's too many comics.
This
and
is true.
They are a scab. There's a scab mentality.
I got it.
There's a scab mentality almost ingrained in comedians, so that to get them to organize and make a stand and to get higher level comics to join in, it's like almost not in the comedian DNA.
Right. No, that's great.
Let's do it.
So
let's band together.
We need a comedy guild, and David is telling me to get the fuck off. So before we get the fuck off, where can everyone follow you on social media, check out your shows, hear more of your rants about the declining middle class?
That's right. I blame Quentin Tarantino. My website is jlcomedy.com. On Twitter, I'm JL Covan, JLCAUVIN. Weekly podcast. Can I?
Yeah.
The Righteous Prick podcast on iTunes every Tuesday. And on my website, there's links to YouTube. I have a lot of sketch videos. So look up that Biggie one. It's on my website. Look up the Biggie sketch and others, impression videos and stuff. Thank you.
Awesome. And you can catch Merriment and Mortification at Our Shrunken Head next Saturday at 6:30. I'm Marissa Smith. This has been Big Talkin' Brewskies. And remember, you guys, Steve Bannon sucks his own cock. Have a good night.
Yeah, big talking brewskis. Marissa Smith is who you see. What a cooler combo in here. Crack a cold one, we're on the air. Big talking brewskis. Marissa Smith is who you see. What a cooler combo in here. Crack a cold one, we're on the air. Kicking back, having a few beers, we're chatting. Pull up your chair, we're all relaxing. Any subject, we never dismiss. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Comedy, sex, relationships, more. Any subject, we got it in store. Big talking brewskis is coming in live. Crack one open, Marissa has arrived. Big talking brewskis with Marissa Smith. Yeah.